little bit about Eric and my relationship with him, but before I do, I want to thank Maggie and Robert for opening their beautiful home. Those of you that don't know that are maybe not into this home before for a political event, Maggie is a stalwart supporter of reform and improvement, not only in the Dallas Independent School District, but within the city. And so she's been a supporter of many political candidates, and I'm deeply grateful for your support of me and for your support of Eric and others. So thank you for hosting. So I think I know many of you in the audience, but for those of you that I don't know, I represent the Dallas ISD School Board Trustee District that encompasses this area, most of North Dallas and East Dallas. But I'm really here tonight to talk about Eric and our relationship and how I know him. I actually grew up in a poor single-parent household, but had the amazing opportunity as a child to go to Green Hill. And for those of you that may be familiar with Eric's biography, that might sound familiar. Eric and I met initially riding the Boys and Girls Club of Dallas school van to and from Green Hill because we were two of the less fortunate kids that were attending there. And for those of you that are familiar with Green Hill, you'll know that most cars pulling up in the carpool line are not the Boys and Girls Club van of Dallas. So we first got to know each other in that context. And then later got to know each other even better playing high school football together. Yeah. And for those of you that follow football, you will know that these positions often line up against each other. Eric was the starting fullback on the offense, and I played linebacker on the defense. And so in practice drills, where we lined up offense against defense, Eric was usually the lead blocker in charge of blocking the linebacker. Eric was the same size in high school that he is now. I was not. So some of my least fond memories of Eric were getting plowed over every play, time after time. But outside of the football field, I had a great deal of respect for Eric, really on the football field too, because he was kicking my butt every play. But outside of the football field, Eric was the kind of student and young man that everybody wanted to get to know. He was the smartest kid in the class. He was charismatic. He was hardworking. He was empathetic. He was just the guy that everybody wanted to be friends with. And for those of you that perhaps haven't seen the video that he posted on his campaign Facebook page of him delivering the commencement speech of the 1994 Green Hill graduation, I would encourage you to go watch it, because it is the kind of video that you watch it and you think, wow, that kid was 18. Because he's saying things at that speech that still resonate today and tell you what kind of leader he is. So I just want to tell you that I personally am very proud to endorse Eric, but I also want to tell you, in my role as a trustee, the primary dimension on which I evaluate political candidates for any office is their value of education. And when you think about education in this race, there's simply no comparison between these two candidates. Eric has been beating the drum for full-day pre-K in Austin for years, long before it was politically popular. And while he was beating that drum in Austin for full-day pre-K, his opponent was opposing the DISD 2015 bond, was opposing the DISD tax ratification election that gave more resources to our students, was opposing pre-K partnerships throughout the district, and was endorsing some school board candidates that luckily lost, but opposed many of the reforms that have carried DISD from being the worst urban performing school district in the state to perhaps the best improving urban school district in the country. And his opponent was endorsing candidates that wanted to unwind all of those reforms. And so if you're like me and you vote on education, no comparison between these two candidates. If you care about some other issue more than education, if you go down the list of housing, development, Grow South, every initiative you're gonna come up with, this is your guy. So with that, I want to introduce my good friend, Jennifer Sawa-Gates, who's going to tell you a little bit more about why she's supporting Eric. But I hope you guys will all bring everybody in your neighborhoods. Thank you.
Thank you, Destin. And I'm going to have the honor to actually introduce Eric, because the mayor has stepped out. He was blind for that, but had needed to move on. But this is an incredible crowd, and this is what you get in District 13. You get it. And and they all were out for me, and we're just going to try to get them all out. That's our goal. So my former colleague, well, not my colleague, but my predecessor, Ann Margolin's in the room. She's out. 14 out there for you. But I got to meet Eric about 2 years after I was elected. I got a phone call from him, initiated by Representative Johnson, that said, let's go and to lunch and meet each other, and I'm gonna, you know, tell me about what you're doing, I'm gonna tell you about what I'm doing down in Austin, and we got to know each other then. Little did I know he's gonna be ready for mayor in a few years later. But I know a little bit. I know a little bit about what's going on at City Hall because of all of you. I've been able to serve for the last 6 years, and we need a mayor. Big supporter of our former mayor, or is still our mayor. You would not like that I said that. but Rawlings, and he's put a lot of initiatives in place, and we have a lot of good things happening, and we can't stop. We cannot stop the momentum of what's occurring in District 13. But really, it's really happening in the South, and it's in downtown, and it's in the West, and that's how we're going to build a tax base. You know, district, the south, the north is 85% of the tax base, 15% in the south. And if you want your tax rate to be lowered, well, they actually did that for us in Austin, which is a good thing, except for it's going to make our budgeting process a little more difficult. We're going to have to be able to grow the south. And we need a mayor that can stand up, as you just heard Mayor Rawlings say, and get corporations to relocate here. Say, we're going to be business friendly. We're going to work with you. We're going to be able to collaborate around the horseshoe. And I really feel, and I'm going to just want to, I've worked with his opponent now for 6 years. We are friends. We get along. My mom is here, so I can't say, and she said, you don't say anything bad about somebody. You can't say anything nice about somebody, but I'm going to leave it at that. But I will promise you, this is the candidate that's going to be able to work with the colleagues around that horseshoe. It's not so easy to get 8 votes. But you know what? You get 8 votes by a process of saying, if you're conservative and you think we can get here this way, and you're more progressive, let's get here this way. It's not by a mandate. And that's what Eric's going to bring to the table. It's going to be bringing the diverse colleagues that I work with, that are majority of us supporting Eric Johnson currently today, to get to that table to say, you know what, all of our goals are to bring Dallas forward and to keep this momentum going and grow the tax base and protect our citizens by supporting the police and taking care of our infrastructure. That's our goal, and it's not about us. It's about moving the city forward, and we're gonna work together to try to get it done. And this is your candidate that can get that done. So with that, I'm gonna let him speak a couple words. We've got a lot of the neighborhood leaders in here in District 13. We've got a lot of our friends and our family. And I know, and I'm gonna a shout out to Nikki. Eric's wife. He's here with us tonight. And I know. And we're going to get all of the rest of Dallas voting for your husband, and so
this team's going to move forward. So, with that, yeah. I'm going to pass my microphone too, if that's okay. Can everyone hear me okay?
Yeah.
All right. Great. First and foremost, thank you all. Oh, a little louder? Okay. Well, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you all taking time out of your schedule to come here on a weekday. And honey, thank you so much. So I'll tell you a little bit about our family very briefly. This is why I'm thanking her. So my wife and I, okay, I will. All right, cue the music, all right? Thank you so much, Maggie, for allowing us to have this event at your home today. Thank you for this awesome karaoke microphone to help everyone here. So, about my family that they supported for you to know, my wife and I actually met at Greenhill School. This, you're going to wonder about this Boys and Girls Club bus that you're
not.
That's the person I met on this bus. I met my wife on the same bus. Children, William and George. William's five, just turned five. He's a student at Silver Prep for Boys Public School on Ross Avenue. It's the old John F. Kennedy Elementary School. It's now an all-boys public school. They wear uniforms, looks kind of like the St. Mark's uniform, and it's focused on math and science. Great school. We love it. BIC is doing an amazing job. Thanks to folks like my good buddy. Who was more than a pretty good ball player. He really was. But I was just a little better. That's how I want to start off by saying this. This campaign is a reflection in every way of how we plan. I say we, and this is what I'm about to get into. How we plan to deliver for you the type of government that you deserve. Because the approach that we're going to take, Mr. Staubach, is a team approach. We're going to take a team approach, and we're going to make sure that we are all working together at all the various levels of government to deliver the type of city that our city deserves. That means working with DISD, hand in glove, to create alignment between the school district and the community college district to improve our workforce so that we can improve our ability to compete with other cities, other major cities that want these corporations to come and bring those jobs to their cities. One of the things that we're not competing as well on that we will when we work together the way we're going to in an unprecedented fashion with folks like Councilwoman Gates, myself, Phil Ritter, the Community College District. You're seeing the players on the team. They're here. This isn't about me at all. I'm going to be, if, for those of you who may remember back in the days when the NBA and basketball was actually about passing the basketball every now and then and sharing the ball. Remember Magic Johnson, how he was a master at making everyone around him better. He was the star of his team, not because he wanted to score all the points, but because he wanted to make sure everyone else on the team was able to do their job to the best of their ability. The mayor of Dallas, it needs to be Magic Johnson. The mayor of Dallas needs to be someone who knows how to pass the ball and knows how to make everyone around them better and how to make sure we get the most out of everyone. So Bill Ritter is here. Not just because we've known each other for, we have known each other for, you know, 15 years or so, we're good friends, but because he represents the Community College District and the role that they're going to play in developing this workforce. Can't do it without him. We just can't do it without him. Dustin's here not just because he's my friend and my former tackling dummy. I'm just kidding. But because he represents the new district and how we're going to have more hand in glove with them. And then, of course, Councilman Gates, we have to be able to, around that horseshoe, disagree, because we won't, I'm not going to lie and tell you that we're going to get 15 nothing votes all the time, we're going to do everything in answer. There's going to be disagreements, but do they have to be acrimonious? Do they have to be ugly? Do they have to devolve into personal attacks? Do we have to question the integrity and the intentions and the motives of everyone who disagrees with us?
Don't tell Mike, Mike have that counsel.
He told me he's very jealous of that, but I told him, I think the rules say you can come back later. He wants to try again. But the point is we will disagree. But my promise to you is we are going to set a tone, we together, where when we disagree, you'll understand that we still respect each other and that the disagreements were based on a reasonable and honest disagreement about the underlying facts or how the approach we're going to take, but it's not going to be based on the fact we think that we're bad people and that we need to demonize each other. And that's just going to end, hopefully, June 8th, when we elect the whole new council. The promise I make to you today, Ms. Margolin, one of my favorite former councilors, I tell her this all the time, okay, so I'm going to tell you this in a group. I loved her style. I've watched council meetings since I was a kid. And I'm telling you, I watched the way she handled herself when she was the councilwoman for this district. She was fantastic. Wow. She was brilliant. She worked well with everybody. She carried herself in such a dignified fashion. We're going to make that cool again. We're going to kill this idea that the way you prove that you're smart It's by how snarky you can be and how ugly you can be to people when they disagree with you and trying to tear people down. There's no need for it. There's no need for it. Everyone needs to understand that in Dallas, going forward, for the next 4 years, maybe 8, we'll see what happens. We are going to be working together in an unprecedented fashion across levels of government. So I'm pleased and I'm proud. I'm like folks, I guess, in the opposition camp who find it somehow, for whatever reason, they find it, you know, concerning that we have support in the North and in the South, or that we have support with, you know, African Americans and white people and Latinos. And they think that there's something wrong with that. And they think that's odd. They think there must be some sort of conspiracy going on. There has to be something going on here. Why on earth would he try to campaign and appeal to everyone? Why wouldn't he try to divide the city and figure out a way to wedge us apart and then capitalize on his, you know, he's African-American. Why wouldn't he try to turn the business community against the African-American community and then try to count votes? Because I've never been that person. My graduation speech when I was 18 years old was all about how, gosh, we're all just alike. We might play dominoes differently, and the gas stations in my neighborhood might require you to have to pay before you turn off the gas.
That's literally what he said.
We're the same. And the city can't ever be what it's capable of being if we keep participating in the politics of division. And it can't be what it can be if we go down this path that's happening around our country where we're trying to turn every office that someone had the foresight to make the mayor of Dallas a nonpartisan office. We should take advantage of that. We don't have to talk Democrat and Republican, thank God, in this race. But there are people who want us so desperately to do that. They want to turn this into, well, you know, how do you feel about this divisive issue that has nothing to do with being mayor, just so I can wedge you off from, you know, someone else? Mm-hmm. We're just not going to do it. We've resisted it for 5 months of this campaign, and we'll continue to resist it for the next 4 years. We are not going to care about Democrat and Republican. We're not going to care about white and black. We're not going to care about North and South. We're going to care about Dallas. We're going to make sure Dallas is the best city in the world. With that being said, we have a little more work to do. There are 7 more days of active voting left in this election. 7 days left, including election day itself. In our city, I'll give you a statistic, roughly half, and it flips back and forth every election, 60-40, one way or the other, roughly half of the votes in the entire election get cast early, and the other half get cast on election day. So we have essentially 7 days left for half of the votes to come in, and then the other half are going to come in on election day. We must make sure that our votes turn out, because there's a discussion out there that, you know, we're doing so well, look at all the endorsements, man, that, like, this thing must be over, I can go ahead and go on a vacation. No, you cannot. I'm going to explain to you very quickly why. Because endorsements don't actually vote. They don't actually mean a thing. They're important to signal to people, you know, that someone who knows something about governing. In this case, we've got a lot of the former mayors, we've got a lot of the current council, we've got a lot of people whose opinions matter who are supporting the campaign. But if you total them all up, it doesn't equal, you know, 100 votes. So we have to actually deliver at the ballot box. And the way we do that is making sure we call our neighbors, that we do events like this, that we let everyone know if you're on social media who you voted for, and make sure we get our votes out. Now, I will tell you this, if we do that, we will win. That is a fact. We do have the support in the community to win this race, but we have to get our votes out. So with that being said, I'm happy to answer any questions anybody has after I turn it over to Ambassador Phillips, or am I answering questions first?
I'll do mine first. Okay.
Well, everyone, my dear friend, Ambassador Jean Johnson Phillips, here you go.
If I speak at this level without the mic. No. Okay, here we go. Can you hear me now?
Yes.
So I just want to say that I first met Eric at SMU. I chair the Simmons School Board, and he's a member of the executive board. And I really met him. He was a nice guy. And about 4 months ago, he walked into our office, and Ray Hunt and I sat down and visited with him. And in the middle of the meeting, we said, "Sorry, do you mind if we just step outside? We need to visit with each other for a minute." I'm sure he thought that was strange. It was strange for us. We'd never done it in all the time we worked together. And we went outside in the hall, and both of us at the same time said, "This is the guy. This is the guy. This is the one we've been waiting for. And we had planned to stay out of the race in the first round. A lot of good people were running, and we just knew one thing, and I'm going to be very direct here. We did not want to see Scott Briggs elected mayor. So let me give you 2 points of information, and then I have one more thing to say. Number one, truth in advertising matters in politics. And as I've gotten to know this guy and his darling wife and Mary, his campaign manager, they cannot lie. They tell the truth. Even if you don't want to hear it sometimes, they tell the truth. And the fact that he is running on ethics as one of his main platforms is important. And here's why. His opponent is running all over this district and all over North Dallas saying he has a plan to reduce property taxes. I don't believe he has that plan. And even if he has a plan, it's not going to reduce property taxes. Eric says we have to expand our tax base. We all know that. And even if that's not the right way to do it, his opponent has voted for every single tax increase since he's been on the city council. So please, tell your neighbors who are falling prey to that misinformation. It's not true. He will not reduce property taxes. Expanding the base, growing the South, making sure that people come here and not Frisco is how we reduce property taxes. So we need to have someone who can be for Dallas first and still get along with the region, because we are a part of a big region. That's number one. Number two, I got an email last week from a former mayor, I won't say who, that he had received that morning saying that our Revolution group has nothing to do with Dallas, based in Washington, D.C., is actively and aggressively supporting Eric's opponent. Now, I think that this is dangerous, and I've been in politics my whole career. It's dangerous for outside groups to come into our hometown and run a national agenda, regardless of what side of the aisle you're on. And, you know, Eric's a big Democrat, I'm a big Republican, but we're both Dallas. That's what we're for in this race. And I think it's dangerous to have outside influence like that. And I want to brag on him a minute because I questioned it. I'm a fundraiser, as you all know. I'm getting to that. But Eric, at the beginning, said, I'm not taking any lobby money because I'm a sitting state rep. And I agreed with that, but I did ask the question as a good big sister and said, are you sure? There's a whole lot of money in Austin that we can't. He said, no, it's not right. The law says I can run for another office. The law says I can take the money, but I'm not going to do that because I don't want any appearance of anything that's improper. So I think it's really not good for his opponent to bring in outside radical groups who have a different, they don't really care about Dallas. They care about a national power agenda.
Jane, you should make sure everybody knows that our Revolution is the former Bernie Sanders campaign team on the stand platform of supporting socialism.
So, thank you very much, because I really wanted to say that. See, you might have been better on the field than you thought. Good on my field. Anyway, what I was going to say, though, is this is back to what Mayor Rawlings said. Think of our great, great leaders in Dallas. They weren't partisan. They were trying to create a city in the middle of nowhere who had no reason to exist. We love our Trinity, but it wasn't a great port. You know, we had to build our port at DFW. It wasn't a town that had anything natural. It had people. It had people. That's what Dallas has. And Dallas is the one place in the United States that you can come, and if you're honest and you're smart and you work hard, and you try to do the very best you can at what you're doing, people will receive you into any living room, into any parlor, into any church, into any neighborhood. And that's this guy. He's the guy that builds bridges to all of our city. And we are now, this is a big decision for our city. And believe you me, I never thought in a million years I would be even involved in another mayor's race as long as I lived. But I'm passionate about this because we're at a crossroads. So all I'm asking you to do, if you have some spare change, if you have it, if you decide not to go to dinner tonight and you think I would have spent $150 or $500 on dinner, think about helping us in these last few days, because the expenses of a campaign are ridiculous, and his opponent has enough outside money to go on TV. We're not going to be on TV. We are knocking doors. We are talking to people on the telephone. We are doing the interviews. He is working dawn to dusk and into the night. Nikki is everywhere she can be. She has a full-time job with the North Bay. She has two little babies at home. This is the new Dallas. This is the new generation of leadership that's honest and smart as heck and can provide the solutions that we have to keep going forward based on the last few years. So help us if you can with a contribution. You can go online. But most of all, please, please spread the word. If you don't do anything else after tonight, tell people this is not over. This is a race. It's not a coronation. It's a race. And we're up against a very serious opponent who will not rest because his supporters have a different reason for going to the polls. They're against things. We're for things. And with that, I'm going to thank you all, and Maggie, Robert.
We're gonna go. Eric's going to answer a few questions.
Your generosity is great, but I'm gonna, that's what I was going to say. We'll turn it over to Eric. Have at him because he's smart as heck, and I guarantee you you'll like his answer.
Define the turning point, and what are the most important things about this turning point?
Well, I think that one of the turning points we've kind of referred to already, which is the change in culture and the change in style of leadership at City Hall. The ethics issue is an important issue because it's sort of a cloud hanging over City Hall that undermines people's trust in government. And the problem when you have trust eroded in government is that people become very, very cynical. They stop believing that you even have the capacity to achieve good things through government and smart government. And we have to reverse that, because the reality is folks like Councilwoman Gates are working very hard on your behalf, but it gets all undone when you have people, you know, carted out of the building in handcuffs. It's unfortunate, but that's what we've had. We've had a string of people over the past decade hauled out of the building in handcuffs. We have to come in very quickly and, I believe, reform the ethics code early in our new council and administration. And one of the things I think we need to do is to bring new eyes to the problem. We have to have people looking at this issue who design ethics codes. Like, our state ethics code is actually much better than our city one. It's not perfect, but it certainly has teeth to it, some enforcement to it. Our current ethics code is very much a toothless tiger. I mean, it's a document that you can violate pretty much any provision of without any impunity. It won't even slow you down, apparently, in running for mayor on that platform. I mean, I actually said that in the debate today. It's incomprehensible that we have an ethics code that you can blatantly violate and actually run for the highest office in the city and it not even be an issue, and that you're not even at risk of any type of punishment or even a real scrutiny of the issue. Like, I don't know what's taking the city so long to evaluate the fact that we have a contribution. Okay, there's not a person in this room who, if they wrote me a check as an individual for $6,000, I would take. I would hand you back the check tonight and say, you can't give me a check that large.
But we would take one from 5,000.
I would tell you that you can give me $5,000, and that's all. But what my opponent has done more than once is, well, tell folks that what you can do instead is you can give me, so the limit for the council when you're not running for mayor is $1,000. He's accepted a $1,000 contribution and said, well, do you have any minor children, like, you know, four-year-olds, five-year-olds, that you can just write checks and pretend like they're the ones giving it and to skirt the rules? It's a clear violation of the rules, and it's an issue. We have to reform ethics code early on to restore public trust, and then we can get to the work of actually doing some of these things that people want us to do, like working on lowering your property taxes through creating what I want to do, and you may be heard to say this, I want to find a leader in our business community, someone that has experience and has credibility, to serve as a workforce czar for this city.
You can't have Todd. He's ours.
Okay. I want someone who's not Todd Williams to work with the city to help us bring together the necessary entities into an interlocal agreement where we actually spell out not only what we're going to do to improve the city's workforce, but we're going to do something that you are really, really good at, Todd, which is we're going to put numbers on this thing, which we are hesitant to do in Dallas. We're not going to continue to give ourselves a bunch of A's for effort and say, hey, we're doing all these initiatives, we're working really hard. We're going to put some accountability and measures into this. We're going to say, this is how many people we'd like to move out of unemployment and low-skill employment into middle-skill employment, and this is the amount of time we'd like to try to move them over and start measuring what we're doing and holding it up against our own metrics and our own efforts so we can actually determine what's working, what's not, and if things are proven not to be working very well. We don't get mad and blame someone and tell them that they're a terrible person. We can say, we're going to do less of that and more of something else. It's just the way you would run a business. If you had a product line that wasn't performing, you'd stop selling that product. If you were smart and you try to redevelop a new product or redirect resources to that. We're going to try to bring that approach to government. But I want someone who knows how to do that from the business community, a czar, to come in and help us figure that out for the city, because I think it's that important of a priority. So you'll see a shift in how we approach that problem. And then on the infrastructure things, we definitely need to focus on making sure that we are letting contracts in the most efficient way so that you don't have endless construction that seems to go on and on forever. We need to prioritize projects a little bit differently. And that's something that, I don't have the solution in my pocket here to tell you this is exactly what we're going to do. I'm not actually auditioning to be the city manager of Dallas. I'm actually running to be the mayor of Dallas. I have enough sense, though, to know that we didn't invent the concept of improving streets. Many cities around the United States do this better than us. How about we take a best practices approach to that? Find out what the cities who do it best do and try some of those things. It's a revolutionary concept, except it's not people who've been looking at data for years. So we need to become a more data-oriented city. We need to actually make sure that it's okay, change our philosophy about what it means to look outside to what other people are doing, and when they're doing things that are good, we need to be able to copycat some of those things. But the point is we're gonna have a change in our mentality on some of these issues, and I think you're going to like the result, and you'll be proud of the government that you've elected. Yes, sir.
Eric, once you're mayor, in the first instance, when a corporation, a business, is looking to relocate in North Texas, how differently will you approach it so that Dallas wins that business?
Right. Great question. So it's going to be a very delicate balancing act. I've been talking about this on the campaign trail. I am not suggesting that we start a dog-eat-dog, reality show-type, survival of the fittest competition with all of our neighboring cities and announce to the world that, hey, we're out to get you. Dallas is here on the scene, here is Roar type thing. I'm not suggesting that we take that approach. I am suggesting, however, that we do this. Our Chamber of Commerce has been reoriented over the years to being a regional chamber, the Dallas Regional Chamber, and they should continue on that path because our regional partnerships are important. We need to respect the agreements that we've entered into and the entities that we've created. Like DFW are economic drivers for this entire area, including Dallas. We need to respect those agreements. And we need the Chamber of Commerce and other entities to really make sure that we continue to do those things that we're doing well. But we do have to think about the impact on our tax base and what it's doing to our tax rate for those of us who pay taxes in Dallas for those relocations that we're talking about to occur just outside of our doorstep. And we have to ask ourselves, why are people locating just outside of our doorstep? The answer is, in some cases, because we are sort of in this weird spiral where our tax rates are higher, so people can get a lower tax rate than some of our neighboring cities. But it's also because it's not the easiest to do business with the city of Dallas. Businesses will tell you that doing business with the city of Dallas means running a gauntlet of going back and forth between city staff and elected council folks, in some cases, who really view it as their job to put companies through their paces and really make sure that they go through them as an individual to make that individual member happy before they'll do what's in the best interest of the city. So we have to address that. That's another issue about the culture and the approach. And that's something I've talked to Councilwoman Margolin a lot about. I think, you know, the approach that she had when she was a councilwoman was get involved when you need to get involved, but otherwise, let staff do their job and do what's best for Dallas, and don't turn this into a fiefdom situation. So we're going to make it easier to do business with the city of Dallas. We're going to work on lowering the tax rate. We're going to improve the workforce to make it a place where people actually want to be, because if our workforce is better, then what companies will want to do is be as close to that workforce as possible so they don't lose talent to the commute. So if the workforce in Dallas is the best workforce around, you won't want to be in Allen, because you don't want to risk the workforce passing on to your job opportunity. Like, my wife has passed on numerous job opportunities in Frisco, Plano, Allen, because she doesn't want to do that commute. She doesn't want to be on 75 going all the way up to nearly Oklahoma to work for a retailer over there. She doesn't want to do that. She's made that choice to spend more time with our family and less time in her car. Companies will be aware that people, especially this new generation, doesn't want to be in their cars that long. And they'll say, I want to be in Dallas because that's where the workforce we want to be near is. And these people today, these young people, they want to be able to bike and walk to work, or at most be in a car for 15 minutes. They do not believe in the old sit in the car for 45 minutes to an hour each way every day. They just won't take that job. So if we make those three changes, we'll get people to start putting their address in the city of Dallas and not Richardson, Texas, Irving, Texas. And we can do that in a way that doesn't make Richardson and Irving and Grand Prairie and our surrounding cities feel like we're in a dog-eat-dog competition with them. We'll just be beating them on fair terms by doing what we need to be doing.
So how do you address the poverty rate in the city?
Right, so we have a lot of our city lives in poverty. And my work is called poverty action. I like to brag, but I've never experienced poverty. I lived in poverty my entire life until I was able to go off to college, because I was pretty much living in poverty. So I didn't get my first car until I got my first job. That's how it works. No, I didn't get a car in high school. I wrote the Boys and Girls Club. You remember how over the years, as everybody got cars, people started to peel off riding on the bus when they got a car? You know who was still up in the last day of high school? Still sitting on that bus with the little kids every day? That's me. Didn't get a car, but I was in a job. And I don't mean like, you know, a pretend job you're paying for your family in terms of your sort of shit. I mean, my first actual job post-college was home. The keys, in my opinion, having moved from poverty into the middle class, whatever class I'm thinking of being now, is income. Actual money. They don't necessarily need a development or a Starbucks or some sort of project. People have sort of ever in this town have thought that the solution to poverty is a program or a project or a development, something to spur development. Here's the secret. It's not really a big secret. If you ask anyone who's in business or does retail, especially, they'll tell you. When we decide where to go, it's not that complicated. We look at disposable income in the surrounding area. If the disposable income is there, we're coming whether you want us or not. We'll figure it out. But we're not gonna not put a Starbucks where there are people who can afford a $6 cup of coffee. We're coming. We'll put one on two corners at the same intersection if it warrants it. But we don't have to be cajoled into doing it, or, you know, incentivized into doing it, or tax abated into doing it if the income is there. So the workforce focus is so important, because it actually is the one thing that we do right, and we can create more cybersecurity jobs in this town because there are people who have been trained in that at our community colleges, thanks to people like Phil Ritter. And those people start making more money. The Olive Garden and the casual dining and the movie theater and all the things we're trying to shoehorn in these communities will come on its own. That's the development secret. You invest in the people's education and training. That's what the workforce is, our job is going to be, to make sure that we are really, really moving the needle on that, and the rest will follow. The sad part about this for me politically is that I'm very aware of how politics works, is that it will take more time for this to actually take full root than I'll ever have as mayor. It'll take a little bit longer, but it'll be the sustainable, actual solution to the perplexing, persistent problem of just deep, entrenched poverty in the southern part of our city. It'll be the actual sustainable solution that we've been looking for, but it's going to take someone finally just biting the bullet politically and say, I'm going to work on something that I'll never get credit for, If I'm mayor 4 or 8 years later, people say, I'm not sure exactly what he accomplished, but he spent so much time on the workforce issue, but hopefully 25 years later, 30 years later, people will say, now I get why that was so important, what he put in place, because now we have a southern part of our city that's largely indistinguishable from the northern part in terms of education and workforce. That's the goal.
Person.
Thank you.